live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about so many important issues. I've decided not to have a guest on because with the election at hand, I wanted to share some commentaries that I've written, as well as those of others, such as Chris Hedges, on what it means to select the lesser of two evils and why haven't we paid any attention in the mainstream media to the significance of third-party candidates. I'll also be sharing some of the latest on health and nutrition with specific emphasis on issues that just don't get discussed. For example, from Zach White, what do we know about our sex hormone status? Have you had it checked? Also, how to thwart a stealth killer? And also, how can we create healthier skin? And how can we protect our heart? These are just some of the issues that we need to give some time and attention to, and we will. First up today, however, is I want to talk about a way that we can impact the aging of our brain and body. And it is called DHA. It's an essential fatty acid. And what we've seen in study after study is that it is the ultimate brain food. I guess there's at least 20 different studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing us that highest concentrations of DHA in the body will indicate a better functioning brain, living a longer life, giving the real nutrients to the cells that the cell requires. In fact, I've been using it in the people I counsel with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and multiple sclerosis and dementia, memory loss, for a long time. In fact, even children that have the highest levels of DHA do better on tests. They're better students. Why? Simple. This very important fatty acid plays an essential role throughout the body, but it really plays a role in the brain's cerebral cortex, the retina, and even in human sperm. As we age, according to Kurt Stoeckle, and most of the people in this audience would probably be aware of this, your levels of DHA simply decline. In fact, almost everything that was important in your biochemistry early in life declines. Your vision diminishes, the quality and texture of your skin diminishes, the tightness in your gums diminish, your gums begin to recede, your muscle tensile strength decline. Not that these are inevitable, they are not. But it's what happens when we make the wrong choices and we do so consistently. So when you look at the brain, especially in people over the age of 40, you'll see that your DHA levels have substantially dropped off. Now, that's important for the all-inclusive hippocampus region of the brain. And we know that when you supplement in any kind of animal study, you'll get a normalization of the hippocampal DHA content. Now, there are several ways of getting DHA, and we thought it was only from the omega-3 fatty acids found in fish. Not true. Algae-based DHA increases the omega-3 index by 75%. So a low omega-3 index indicates a high risk of developing coronary artery disease. And while most people obtain their DHA from fish or fish oil, we have also discovered that you can get it from other sources, including sea vegetables and from flaxseed, and that will boost all of the different nutrient capacity of your brain. Now, why? I want to go a little further in depth in this. I have a new documentary that I've just finished and a new book I've just finished, but it won't be out until the spring, on this very topic. So I'm up on it, and I'm excited by it. And I'm also eager in January to see what we can do over a year of helping people who have defined and medically treated Alzheimer's, whether or not with lifestyle and behavior modification we can help improve their condition and hopefully even in some cases reverse it. But it starts with, what does DHA do? Well, it's actually a triple-acting neuroprotective agent. Brain tissue has the highest concentration of DHA in the body. Now, that tells me that brain function relies in unique ways on the fatty acid. And within the brain itself, regions most closely related to memory show the greatest concentrations of DHA. And even at the cellular level, DHA concentrates in the structures involved in forming new memories, such as synaptic membranes and tiny outgrowths called neurites. Large-scale studies, really good quality studies, show us that the higher the DHA intake on brain function, the better we're going to be able to respond. You'll be able to reduce cognitive impairment. You'll be able to reduce memory loss. And of course, cognitive impairment and memory loss both lead to Alzheimer's. So people who eat a large amount of fatty fish, and there's really no safe fish now because so much of the oceans are polluted. But if you're going to eat fish, my suggestion would be sardines. They would be the safest fish to eat. Now, on the other hand, a low intake of fish end up almost causing DHA levels to just drop off the chart. And that means you're at a greater risk of cognitive impairment and especially Alzheimer's. So for all the vegans or vegetarians in this audience who do not eat fish, please make sure that you have a blood chemistry done to determine, are you deficient in DHA? I realize they're the raw foodists out there, and they're more like a cult today. I'm very disappointed, but then again, I won't mention the person's name, but 4 years ago, I was invited to an international conference of money managers, of some of the most powerful people from the Vatican to 16 Russian oligarchs, the people that actually manage their money. And they were all interested in the whole area of health and what I believed that the future of the health movement would be and people's health. So I flew into the Bahamas. There were 21 of these individuals, and we spent about 10 straight hours. I did it as a courtesy to one of my friends who was one of the sponsors of this event. And I answered their questions. And all this time, there was this guy just promoting, just mercilessly, couldn't stop self-promoting himself about the raw food this and chocolate that and raw food this. And I finally got him inside. I said, look, I said, you know, they got your message. If they're going to support you and invest in you or help you, fine. But you're way over the top that everything, it's a miracle. The raw can cure everything. In point of fact, it can't. And a lot of people are going to get sick trying. But initially, when you give someone who's been on a junky diet, a crappy diet, and you give them some good, healthy, organic, raw foods, and you get more vegetables and fruits and juices, and you get them to be more conscious of what they're eating, you get rid of the hot dogs and hamburgers, they will absolutely get better. And that's important. And there, raw is very important. But it's not raw that the body benefits from. Because if you had a background in science, which, by the way, this person doesn't, but in marketing, they have a good background. They've gone on to develop quite an economic bank account for themselves and reputation. But if they knew anything about nutritional chemistry, biochemistry, inorganic chemistry, they would know that your body doesn't digest raw for a lot of things. And if you do have some things that are raw, especially the beans, you can end up with trypsin inhibitors, and you can end up with nutrient deficiencies, and you can end up with B12 deficiencies, and especially one of the worst deficiencies in vegetarians, and one of the most costly for your health, is carnosine. You don't have vegan sources of carnosine. So as a result, people end up having part of a story, part of a piece of the truth, but just like macrobiotics, part of it's very good. Eat locally grown food in season and organic absolutely makes sense. And then you go to the national conference where all the leaders of macrobiotics are, and I went, I was their keynote speaker, and they're drinking apple juice that's a year old from Washington State, eating seaweed from Japan, having brown rice from Texas, and starchy vegetables from Maine. Trouble is, we were in Florida. didn't seem to matter, these contradictions. And then they don't believe in supplements. Why? What do you got against supplements? And I spoke with the leader of macrobiotics, the whole movement. And, of course, he believed in cigarette smoking, as he had a pack of cigarettes. He looked a little anemic. He's still alive today. And his family, and many of them had cancer. But that's the danger. When you get into cults, when you get into movements that have some truth, and then the personality of the person leading it overwhelms all other realities, you end up with misguided information that ends up causing people problems. So I'm telling you, an 100% raw food diet is not the ideal diet. You can end up with a lot of problems. And DHA deficiency is one of them. See, when I sit across from people and I'm requiring blood chemistry so I know what's going on in a person's body, and I'm seeing they're deficient in the person, but I eat healthy. I eat all this stuff. Yes, and did you know that broccoli and the asparagus and the Brussels sprouts and the cabbage and all those things you're eating raw, if you're not juicing them, 90% of the nutrients are going right through your gut, undigested. They're trapped in the oligocellulose. Had you blended them, well, that's okay, but then you're going to get too much fiber, and then you're going to end up with food going so fast through your intestine, the duodenum, the part of the intestine where you really absorb most of your nutrients, the food's not going to have time to be really bioavailable and hence absorbed. So you end up with a phenomenon of eating a good quality food, but eaten in the wrong form, and then you have so much fiber in your gut that it sweeps too fast through the gut, and you end up with malabsorption, or you end up with incompatible bioavailability, so your cells don't have enough of the actual nutrients. Juicing, by the way, is very good, but you have to have solid food, because if you did nothing but juice too fast, it goes through the system way too fast. And so that's why I say have 100% living food, meaning about 25 to 30% that is lightly cooked, that breaks down the nutrients, makes them more bioavailable, and therefore slows some of that real fast digestion up. Let's put it down so you get maximum nutrient bioavailability. And you can see it. You'll take a blood chemistry of a person who's eating a junk food diet. You take a blood chemistry of someone who's eating a high juice diet, one who's eating an all raw food diet, and you just start seeing the deficiencies across the spectrum. So clean up the diet, but also allow proper digestion. Otherwise, it'd be as if I was talking right now and I'm saying, brain tissue has the highest concentration. I'd give you the words, but be too fast for you to focus and see their significance. So, anyhow, it was interesting because after we talked about the health movement and the history of health and the future of health, and these people were very appreciative, and they were all pretty nice people, then my plane was the next morning, so I had all night to talk with them, not about health and not about their investing, but about everything that's important. I was just absolutely dumbfounded by what they did not know about everything else in life except how to make money for the people who had invested in them. And so this whole idea that when people are powerful and wealthy, that they have all this knowledge, that they're somehow a great venue. Maybe it's the Council on Foreign Relations. Maybe it's the Bilderbergs or the Trilateral, the people who have taken the arrogant idea that they deserve to decide what kind of policies we should be living by, and what kind of governments, what kind of currency, and what kind of principles and laws. Or maybe it's the Business Roundtable. You don't get on that unless you're one of the most powerful business leaders, and not a small business person. No, corporate leaders of the major corporations, and then not just any corporation, but a high-valued corporation. But why should we trust them? They've learned how to make money, but at what expense? How they've made their money. We never question that. So from my perspective, when I have a chance to meet some of the most powerful people in the world and I have a chance to see their strengths and weaknesses in the conversations we have, I'm absolutely dumbstruck at how lacking in basic knowledge of life so many people are. Anyhow, back to the idea of DHA. So what we know is that Those who have a low fish intake and a low blood DHA level correlate strongly with increased risk of cognitive impairment and especially Alzheimer's. And that's important. Well, unlike other fats, which accumulate in fat cells for storage and later release as energy, DHA resides almost exclusively in cell membranes, which undergo continuous degradation and renewal. What that means in lay language is that in turn that your body needs a constant dietary supply of DHA to avoid depletion and neuron injury. One study showed that DHA supplementation in humans at 2 grams a day, that's 2,000 milligrams, 1,000 in the morning, 1,000 in the evening, provided sufficient DHA to maintain healthy function. But levels drop when the patient stopped taking the supplements. So you gotta make it a part of it. So let's just summarize what we learned. 1, DHA protects brain tissue from inflammation. Now, this is accomplished by promoting anti-inflammatory molecules, which then suppress pro-inflammatory molecules in brain cell membranes. And that protects you from brain aging. 2, DHA stimulates physical changes that underlie learning and memory, which means that DHA promotes outgrowth of neurites, the tiny projections that form intimate connections between cells as memories form, and DHA promotes rapid signal transduction across synapses and helps membranes maintain their fluidity, the condition required for rapid changes in shape and function we recognize as memory. And 3, DHA promotes healing after injury. I don't care what kind of injury, including a stroke. And DHA, you know, is important because right after an injury, let's say that you're a football player, and yesterday we had football games, and a lot of those guys were getting hit hard in the head. That can create injuries to the cell membranes. And then you release DNA in massive amounts for conversion into compounds called protectins. And all protectins are nature's way of maintaining the balance between oxidant damage and recovery. They begin to form at the very first stage of damage at the cellular level, and whether from a seizure, a stroke, or a traumatic brain injury. Well, what we know is DHA-derived protectins function in a dual manner. They trigger anti-inflammatory processes and simultaneously begin process of injury resolution. So that's good. So if you want a better memory and a better brain and living longer, get your DHA. For vegans, you can get them from algaes. Yes, seaweed is very high. Algae-derived DHA oil is equivalent to that derived from fish in terms of its bioavailability and impact on human health. And they now have new techniques to extract the DHA from algae. And so there's no need to eat fish if you're a vegan, and therefore you can get your DHA, and that's good news. And by the way, almost every vegetarian that I counter ends up having a small amount of DHA in their blood, so they're not supplementing the right way. So make sure you don't leave that out. All right? I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. Now, we're broadcasting on WPFW in Washington, D.C., and I look forward to being there this Sunday for an all-day event, showing of a brand-new documentary that's not been released anywhere else in the United States, followed by a lecture on the cure for all things, followed by a health support group. It's going to be a long day. It's going to be a lot of fun. And a little later today, especially at our special time that we're on PFW, I'll tell you how you can get up to date on that. We're also broadcast all over the world in, I think, 140 countries now. We have listeners, so I would like to welcome you. We are the number one listened to progressive radio program in the world, and we get calls from all over the place. Now, there has been a little bit of a technical challenge for the last, about 5 days, simply because after the storm, our sister station, WBAI, which I started on in March 15th, 1977, was knocked off the air. And so they came up, and we were happy to give them our studios so they could broadcast live and 24/7. But we at Progressive Radio Network then went to our best of, with my show being a live broadcast, but also pre-records and then getting some of our guests up. Hopefully in the next day or two, with the studios being ready again down on Wall Street, BAI will be able to return to its home base and be able to broadcast. They're still on the Internet now, which is good, but on their regular basis. So if you've had a turn on BAI and you've heard some disruptions in their regular programming, just please be understanding and sympathetic to the plight that this is what happens when there is such an emergency. And we have also invited WBI and its management, and we've met with them, to put at no cost, no rent, an emergency backup studio upstairs in our editing suite so that if it ever happens in the future that there's any reason BAI is knocked off the air, it would not disrupt Progressive Radio's broadcast. They would immediately go to their own dedicated and push a button and have a month's worth of programming, or be able to broadcast from there, or be able to get their host to call in and broadcast from there. And that would be easy, inexpensive to do. I'm going to suggest probably in less than $10,000 they could have it up and running. So at least it's there. If it's never needed, fine. If it is, at least then they have it. I'm a big believer in planning for the future, planning for the worst, hoping for the best. And that way, if the worst happens, they'll be there. But they'll be back to the regular programming, and we will be back to our regular schedule programming in hopefully the next day or two. In a moment, a commentary from Professor James Petras from Global Research on U.S. Elections, From the Lesser to the Greater Evil, The Demise of Critical Liberalism, and Chris Hedges, Why I'm Voting Green. And then I'm opening it up for your thoughts on our talkback segment. Then, from Are We Headed Back to the Great Dust Bowl, on the environmental segment of our program, I'm going to share with you why we now have Great Dust Bowls. You wouldn't know it in New York, but it's back. Didn't we end that in the 1930s? Yes. Then why is it then in Oklahoma and in other places the sky can be filled for miles with giant dust clouds? I'll get to that. Also, I'm very concerned about how our government is saddling parents with college loans they cannot possibly afford and hence cannot repay. What is the real game behind all this? We have a lot to share with you. And finally today, as it stands at this hour, we will lose Proposition 37 tomorrow. And it's because they, the opposition, meaning Monsanto and Dow and PepsiCola and all these other major manufacturers and legislators and the NAACP chapters all over the state of California, shame on them for this, they are all voting no, we don't want our food labeled. We, however, have done all we can, but we did not have the money. I cannot tell you our efforts, but they were massive at the personal level in the last 10 weeks. But we did not have the resources of KPFK or PFW working on our KPFA working on our behalf. They just decided, along with the national board, it was an important issue. Well, I believe it is an important issue, but that's unfortunately, I can't change any minds. So I'm asking the people in this audience, if you know anyone in California, or if you're listening from California, this is our last effort before tomorrow to get everyone you know to vote yes. If they want to know why, we have posted over 100 articles that show you why everything that you thought you knew about genetic engineered food, you better look again, because there's never been a single study showing they're safe or effective. There's all this bad research that they put forward, we've discredited their research, and yet our good words from all the scientists, from Dan Vandana Schieffer, from Jeffrey Smith, they're not inviting on to debate. So they've cut off the debates, they've eliminated any kind of discourse, and they're just hitting every hour an ad on television. So now where we were at 67% voting for yes labeling, and 90% of people in California saying yes, they wanted to know if food was genetically engineered because they wouldn't eat it, now we're down to 37%. Isn't it amazing what propaganda will do to you? So, unfortunately, that would probably be the same in any state, not just California. They bought the vote. I'm Gary Nall. Again, last opportunity, do all you can. We've been doing e-blast for the last 24 hours, every 15 minutes, to every group, everyone we can. We've given them six-segment documentaries on genetic engineering that we produced, but we're up against massive odds. In studio for a moment, before we go to our commentaries and your call, talk back, is Jason. Hi, Jason.
All right, good afternoon, Gary. I just wanted to say, as you said, we're being very gracious to WBAI, and they're here working with us. But the good thing about that is for us that, unfortunately, we are in archives, they can get reacquainted with a lot of shows that they haven't heard in the past, or they can get new hosts like Richard Martin, Mike Fader, some great hosts that are on Progressive Radio Network. So we would just please encourage everyone to go back, do some research on our site, check some great shows that we have, and go through our archives, because there's many, many great shows. And with that, with just besides that, we also have great articles that we put up, like you had said earlier. We have everything from the elections tomorrow, Big Pharma, Monsanto articles, nutrition, economic articles, climate change. We have every category there, over 45 different categories. People can read hundreds of articles daily. So come check us out. There's a lot of great stuff there that you might have missed in the past, and we have a great opportunity right now for you to catch up and really learn about the great people we have here, plus the great new people that will be joining us, people like Bruce Levine, Mayor Mike Lerner, Chris Hedges, people like Jill Stein and Rocky Ansar will do some debates and talk with on our airwaves. So please come check everything out at PRN.FM, and you'll really see some of the great, great progressive minds we have working with us.
Over the weekend, I saw a news flash that the Huffington Post was the go-to place. Well, I just see the same old liberal stories there, which are fine if you just want one side of an issue and nothing on the important issues. That and celebrity news. Like, who cares? We go out of our way every 24 hours to have people working all 24 hours collecting articles from progressive sites,
right,
progressive authors on progressive issues that allow us to have solutions to problems, look for the truth without being limited by guilt or shame or defiling in some way our ideological base, because we have no ideological base. We have no body politic. We have no religious, a doctrine we're abiding by. We're just looking for the truth in whatever we can find that can help a person. So we have 10 times more articles per day than the Huffington Post and anyone else out there in the world. Okay. So we are the source. You put us up against Al Jazeera. Put us up against the BBC and see at the end of the day who has more articles that are essential to life. We do consistently. The difference is only progressive people know about it and go and read. We had 347,000 reads that was just one click, all right? 20 million people watching a documentary. It's amazing how many people use a resource, but now in this crisis, people can at least know there are other sources. I'm not telling you not to go to the Huffington Post. I'm simply saying that we have progressive articles that are not about honoring a political system, but rather honoring the truth in all ways in life. And we have 45 categories, not just one or two.
Nope.
So whatever a person needs on aging, on women's issues, teen issues, college issues, you name it, we have it covered. Okay, okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary.
All right. Now to our commentaries. And I will, if I have time, I will give my own commentary on when I heard the president and Mitt Romney saying, both of them, that we are a nation of exceptionalism. All right. Well, I'm going to ask him if they're going to take responsibility for being exceptional when it comes to all the things we've done in the past and are currently doing that no one should feel is exceptionally, except essentially bad. Also, to both people, my thoughts on this. How cruel is the economy to millions of desperate American families? Let us just simply look at the facts. One recent survey discovered that 40% of all Americans have $500 or less in their savings. You heard me right. Most Americans, most working Americans, could not survive without their pay for more than 5 days. A different recent survey found 28% of Americans did not have a single penny saved for any emergency. That's 20%, almost a third. That's 100 million people don't have a single penny in their bank account. There are close to 10 million households that do not even have a single bank account. And the number has been increasing since 2009. So exactly how are these people, when faced with challenges of their value of their mortgage being at one level and the value of their property being substantially less, and they have no money to cover the spread for a buffer? If you had $100,000 in savings and your house originally was worth $300,000, now it's worth $200,000, you could at least get through a period of time. The banks don't care if you don't have money. All they want is you pay us compounding and late interest fees, or we take back your property and still hold you accountable. As a result, people are afraid to leave their homes. They're afraid of their credit. I don't care about my credit. That would be the last thing I would consider if I was spending money I didn't have on maintaining an asset that will never get its value back. Yet we're giving money on unlimited amounts, without exception, to every bank, the very banks that are throwing people out. So why can't these two exceptional presidential candidates ask immediately for a moratorium on all home foreclosures for the next 3 years? Why can't they demand that the very banks they've given $20 trillion to, $20 trillion in the last 4 years, get rid of the idea of having any mortgage except the value of the property? So let the banks bring the value of the mortgage down and reset at a 2% interest with no compounding or late fees. They could do that. Even better for those Americans who are living in a home where one or more people are unemployed and therefore have no savings and therefore can't make a mortgage payment, why don't you bring the cost of their mortgage down to 15% of their income, so even poor people or people struggling would have a chance to stay in their home without it being penalized against them? Family homelessness in the Washington, D.C. area, where we're heard right now on WPFW, is one of the largest in America. It has risen 23% since the last recession began. The number of Americans living in poverty has increased by over 6 million new Americans in poverty in the last 4 years. The median household income has fallen for 4 years in a row by more than $4,000. 62% of middle-class Americans say that they have had to reduce household spending and still have no savings. According to a Pew Research Center, 85% of middle-class Americans say that today life is far more difficult than any time in the last 10 years. 77% of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Let me repeat that. 77% paycheck to paycheck. So why isn't it that the Federal Reserve would not give interest-free loans to qualified small business, providing that for every $1 million of a loan you receive, you must hire 2 Americans at a living wage with health benefits? Based upon how many people are out of work and how many small businesses there are or would start or expand, you would then, A, save small businesses in the United States, you would improve the living wage that they would be able to give their employees, and you would put back 15 million Americans to work. That would make an enormous dent in solving our problems. Since January of 2009, the labor force in the United States has increased by 827,000, and that's the figure they tell you. However, that figure represents low-income jobs. Jobs that are terrible. What they haven't told you is that we have lost 8.2 million jobs in the same period of time. And yet they come down with this stupid figure of 7.9 unemployment. Don't trust that figure at all. Any person, an economist or government official who tells you our unemployment has improved is a pathological liar and a sociopath, because these people are deranged. The unemployment level in the United States, the honest one, is closer to 19%. They simply erase anyone who stopped looking. And that's a large number. So remember the figure I just told you, 827,000 employed, 8,208,000 are no longer in the labor force. Hence, they're no longer counted. 60% of jobs lost during the last recession were middle-wage jobs. 58% of jobs created since then are low-wage jobs. So when they brag about the economy's recovering, no, it is not. And all you're doing is giving low-paying jobs where we used to have a middle-wage job. Today, one out of every four workers in our country brings home wages that are at least below the federal poverty level. That's one in four. So how are these people living off their credit card? How can people living off credit cards that create debt then be considered a part of our gross domestic product? That should be from disposable income. It is not. It's from debt. Therefore, we have told the world we are completely, totally bankrupt as a nation, and yet we pretend that we're exceptional in our economic prowess. We are not. It is pure mercenariness. At this point, less than 25% of all jobs in the United States are good jobs, and that's going to shrink. There are 20.2 million Americans that spend more than half of their incomes on housing. That's a 46% increase in the last 10 years. According to USA Today, many Americans have actually seen their water bills triple over the past 12 years. Electricity bills in the United States have risen faster than the overall rate of inflation for 5 years in a row. And health insurance premiums rose faster than the overall rate of inflation last year and the year before and this year. Therefore, to have health insurance means that you're going to pay a lot more for it, and yet you're not getting better health coverage. You're not getting more definitive health coverage. Then why are you paying more? Because based upon those who had access to the White House, all the insurance companies, and those who had the most lobbyists, the insurance and pharmaceutical industry, working together with the for-profit hospital associations, they virtually wrote all of the existing Obamacare laws. Remember, Obama had nothing in the world to do, nothing with his own law. It was all written, every word. He didn't write a period, didn't punctuate a sentence. It was all written by the worst, most absolutely sociopathic people in the United States, the pharmaceutical, the for-profit hospital, and the insurance industry. Then why in the hell haven't you understood this and challenged it? So you're going to pay more and get less because they want more profit. According to one recent survey, approximately 10% of all employers in the United States are going to drop their health insurance because they cannot afford to kick in more. Since 1983, the bottom 95% of all income earners had 62 cents of debt for every dollar they earn. Today, that has soared to $1.48 of debt. So how in the world are we anything other than bankrupt? If you have 62% of debt against a dollar, and now it's $1.48 of debt against dollar, then we are riding on an enormous debt plane. That's an enormous bubble. Today, home mortgage debt in the United States is now 500% larger than it was just 20 years ago, and that's a bubble. Today, consumer debt in the United States has risen 1,700%. Recently, it was announced that the total student loan debt in the United States is $1 trillion. But the trouble is, those students, 55% of new students, don't have jobs or underpaying jobs, and they cannot pay their college debt. And the moment they graduate, that debt clock ticks, and when you don't pay it, it double dips. So they're going to take you not only for the original interest, but compounding interest and late fees. You will never, ever in your lifetime get out of debt if you're the average person graduated from college today and you have a major debt load. So why doesn't the government forgive all that debt? It did it for the insurance industry. It did it for the auto industry. It did it for the banking industry. Why can't it do it for the next generation of students? It could. It chooses not to because the people who say don't do something are not the politicians. Those are their little moronic puppets in Washington. Cumulative total IQ of everyone in Washington, D.C., including the White House, is about 17. These are just morons. The fact that you would have any trust in any governmental agency or any person within that agency is just mind-numbing. They are all sociopaths. Every single politician should be voted out of office in every single election, in every single state, county, local, national. They are all worthless because none of them go to work each day thinking about what's best for you. If they did, then we wouldn't be in wars. We wouldn't be having a national the National Defense Act, the Patriot Act, the FISA Act, that makes you the criminal. We wouldn't have them wiretapping you, and we wouldn't have drones over our cities. We wouldn't have you as the enemy. If we had real, conscious Americans, none of this would exist. The U.S. economy lost 220,000 small businesses during this current recession cycle. We could have stopped most of that, but we chose not to help them, not one of them. But every big bank, they all got saved. Back in 2007, 19.2% of all American families had a net worth of zero or less than zero. Now, that's 32% have zero net worth, more than a third of the American population. And finally, approximately one-fourth of all children in the United States are enrolled in a food stamp program. More than 100 million Americans are now enrolled in at least one welfare program run by the federal government, and that does not even account Medicare. So, and you're going to tell me what? That happy days are here again? They are not. Keep in mind, the November election tomorrow is not a battle between Republicans and Democrats. It is not a battle between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. It is a battle between the corporate state and us, all of us. If we do not immediately engage in this battle, we are finished, as climate scientists have made clear. Chris Hedges will defy, as he stated, quote, "I will defy corporate power in small and large ways. I will invest my energy now solely in acts of resistance and civil disobedience and defiance. Those who rebel are our only hope, and for this reason I will next vote for Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, although I could easily have voted for Rocky Anderson, the Justice Party. I will step outside the system. Voting for the lesser evil or failing to vote at all is part of the corporate agenda to crush what is left of our anemic democracy. And those who continue to participate in this vaudeville of a two-party process, who refuse to confront in every way possible the structures of corporate power, assure our mutual destruction. All of the major correctives to American democracy have come through movements and third parties that have operated outside the mainstream. Few achieve formal positions of power. Now, these movements build enough momentum and popular support, always in the face of fierce opposition, to force the power elite to respond to their concerns. Such developments, along with the courage to defy the political charade in the voting booth, offer the only hope of saving us from Wall Street's predators. The assault on the ecosystem by the fossil fuel industry, the rise of the security and surveillance state, and the dramatic erosion of our civil liberties. It was Alice Walker who said, "The most common way people give up their powers by thinking they don't have any." It was the Liberty Party that first fought slavery. It was the Prohibition and Socialist parties, along with the suffragettes, that began the fight for the vote for women and made possible the 19th Amendment. It was the Socialist Party, along with the radical labor unions, that first battled against child labor and made possible the 40-hour work week. Before them, we had a 12-hour work week. It was the organizing of the Populist Party that gave us the Immigration Act of 1924, along with the progressive tax system. It was the socialists who battled for unemployment benefits, leading the way to the Social Security Act of 1935. Now, let us be clear on this. No one in the ruling elite, including Franklin Roosevelt, would have passed this legislation without the pressure from the outside. It is the combination of a social movement on the ground with an independent political party that has always made history together, whether during abolition, women's suffrage, or the labor movement, so said Jill Stein. We need courage in our politics that matches the courage of the social movements of Occupy, eviction blockades, Keystone Pipeline, civil disobedience, and student strikes, the Chicago Teachers Union, and more. If public opinion really mattered in this race, Jill Stein would win. We have major support in poll after poll on nearly all the key issues, from downsizing the military budget and bringing the troops home, to taxing the rich, to stopping Wall Street bailouts, to breaking up the banks, to ending the offshoring of our jobs, to supporting workers' rights, to increasing the minimum wage, to health care as a human right, through Medicare for all. These are the solutions the majority of Americans are clamoring for. So we must ask. The corporate state has successfully waged a campaign of fear, disempower voters and citizens by intimidating voters through a barrage of propaganda with the message that Americans have to vote for the lesser evil and that making a defiant stand for justice and democracy is counterproductive. It cements into place the agenda of corporate domination we seek to thwart. This campaign of fear, skillfully disseminated by the $2.5 billion spent on political propaganda, has silenced real political opposition. It has turned those few politicians, leaders, who have the courage to resist, such as Jill Stein and Ralph Nader, into pariahs, denied a voice in the debates and the national discourse. Capitulation, silence, and fear, however, are not a strategy. They will guarantee everything we seek to avoid. According to Stein, the Obama administration has embraced the policies of George W. Bush and then gone much further. Wall Street bailouts went ballistic under Obama, $700 billion under Bush, but $4.5 trillion under Obama, plus another $16 trillion in zero-interest loans for Wall Street. Obama continues offshoring our jobs. Bill Clinton brought us NAFTA, which was carried out under George Bush, but it was vastly expanded under Obama to labor abusers in Colombia, to Panama, to South Korea. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, being negotiated behind closed doors by Obama's secret teams at the White House, is NAFTA on steroids. It continues to send our jobs overseas. It undermines wages at home. It overrides American sovereignty by establishing an international corporate board that can overrule American legislation and regulations that protect workers as well as our air, water, and our climate and our food supply. In conclusion, Obama has claimed the power of assassinating U.S. citizens without charge or trial, increasing drone war and vastly expanding the wars in the Middle East. He is waging proxy wars in Yemen, Pakistan, and Somalia. His assault on civil liberties, from his use of the Espionage Act to silence all whistleblowers, to Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act, to the FISA Amendment Act, is worse than Bush's. His attack on immigrant rights also has outpaced that of Bush, Obama, completely. He has deported, let me be clear on this, for all of the people that are harping on Obama's the politician for our race, if you're Latino, get real. Obama deported more undocumented workers in 4 years than his Republican predecessor did in 8 years. There is virtually no difference between Obama and Romney on the issues of student debt, which has turned a generation of college students into indentured servants. But the most important convergence between the Republicans and Democrats is their utter failure to address the perilous assault by the fossil fuel industry on the ecosystem. It was Obama who undercut the international climate record accord reached last year at Durban, South Africa. I reported on this program at the time. American representatives would do nothing, and they did nothing. There is a protracted drought in 60% of the continental U.S. There are record forest fires and rising food prices. We have just now seen the 12 hottest months on record. Storms are growing in destructiveness. All this is happening with less than 1 degree Celsius temperature rise. You've heard me many times on this program say that we are on the road now to 2 to 3% Celsius right now. And yet, not a thing is being done. The flimsy excuses of the liberals, and especially Shame on the Nation magazine for embracing Obama and those others, the supplicant liberals who do not see the truth that Obama is no different than Clinton, who is no different than Bush, they are all the same. Why haven't you asked them about their meetings with the Bilderberg group? They were there. Why wasn't that on a news agenda? There are so many arguments that, well, we can't let Romney appoint the next Supreme Court justice. Then you're ignoring the imperative of building a movement as fast and as radical as possible as a counterweight to corporate power. The Supreme Court, no matter what its composition, will not save us from financial implosion and climate collapse. Those two are inevitable in the immediate future. And Obama, whatever his proclivity on social issues, has provided ample evidence that he will not alter his servitude to corporate state. For example, he has refused to provide assurance that he will not make cuts in basic social infrastructures. So then where does that leave you? Be smart on this. Look at the third-party candidates. Don't waste your vote. on Democrats, Republicans. I'm Gary Nall. Now, talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your opportunity to share your thoughts. I'll continue on tomorrow's show by sharing some of the other important commentaries by myself and other individuals. Like to hear you now, so give us a call. 888-874-4888. Broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and sharing them last week and this week with our sister station, WBAI, and happy to do so, to provide them a forum and office space and desks and computers and phones, everything they need so they can continue functioning, albeit in a more limited way, but at least they're up, and they're up on the Internet as well. For all of you normally listening to the Progressive Radio Network, where we originate all of our programs, I'm here. The other programs are pre-recording and getting up, but at least you're on 24/7, and our articles are up there by the gazillions. Take a look. Let's say hello to some of the people. Al from Rockaway. Your turn, Al.
Hey, Gary. It's Al. I'm just calling to... I wanted to know, you said you were having lectures in the city that were booked Saturday and Sunday. I was wondering if they were going to be ever online or if they were ever going to be broadcasted for the rest. I couldn't make it.
All right. We had wonderful session over the on Saturday and Sunday, yesterday and the day before. What I will do is, because a lot of people could not make it in from Jersey and Long Island because of the storm and transportation and gasoline, next Saturday at noon, I will do one more. Call this number. Call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422, and I will do one on surviving the future. And by the way, one of the lectures went 3 hours yesterday. Good people came. I'm not talking about one of these foolish, and I didn't know they existed. Someone brought this to my attention last night, one of these survivalist shows, a bunch of rednecks, stupid actions. None of this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about ways that we can be prepared, properly prepared, to have the three plans, A, B, and C, in case there's an earthquake, hurricane, solar storms, which are coming. That's what you got to fear. Because if any one of them, we're going to have dozens, any one of them hit us that's an X factor, it's lights out permanently. So what do you do? How do you prepare in advance? Where do you go? That's what we're talking about, and how to do it with other people. So everything that is needed, and the people are very happy about the input they got, all the different groups. So that's what I'm going to talk about, not how to get a gun and go out, you know, and hide someplace. That's all just foolishness. No, this is the right way to survive the future, because now, think of all the people who are indifferent. Ah, I don't want to hear that. You know, and now they don't have anything. And I'm telling you this, don't rebuild anything. Don't rebuild a single thing, because that was just the lightest touch compared to what you're about to experience. Next year, there's a high probability you're going to get with a Category 2 or Category 3, which means 10 times more damage. And everything that you rebuild could be wiped away. And so there's better ways of making choices than thinking somehow that you're going to be strong and tough and get back to where you were. Where you were is never coming back. This was just a wake-up call for all those who were indifferent or suffering from hubris, who felt, I don't have to be prepared, including members of this audience who weren't prepared, didn't have to do any of the things I've been talking about. I did a two-hour show. It's in our archives. Go back to Monday night Progressive Commentary Hour, where I spent 2 hours on this just about a month ago, telling people detail about what to do, what to do. Yeah, they didn't listen. Now they should. All right? So it'll be next Saturday. I'll do one more before I have to get on to taking this new documentary I just finished around the country. Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David. David, your turn.
My difficulty, zero luck calling your store or anybody else about your meeting trying to get a reservation. But I'll send you an email on that. My question is, progressive versus liberal, what's the difference?
Enormous difference, night and day difference. Almost all the progressives I know were once liberal, and many are conservative. There are as many conservative progressives as there are liberal progressives. What happens is, when you're in a liberal or conservative, a Democrat or Republican ideology, almost everything that you are told and some exceptions or variances or arguments you accept as your reality. So when Clinton was president, he was voting for NAFTA, intelligent liberals and Democrats had to go along with it. It was kind of like that bitter pill. They knew that it was selling out the unions. They knew that it was offshoring jobs. And when the foundation, when it was built with the World Trade Organization, the same thing, giving the sovereignty of how to decide on trade disputes to an independent group that was really corporate America and corporate world interests instead of our own interest. That's what a ideology does. Whereas when you become progressive, you're no longer bound by ideologies. You're just looking for the truth, whoever has it, wherever it's spoken, wherever it's at. That's what you use. And progressives look for solutions. A typical liberal, more often than not, will complain forever about what's wrong and who's to blame, as will a typical conservative. Listen to Mark Levin. Listen to Lawrence O'Donnell. Listen to Al Sharpton. Listen to Bill O'Reilly. All they do is blame the other for their crisis. Well, where are their solutions? If they can't come up with a solution inside of their paradigm, it doesn't exist. Where the progressive, they're not looking to honor an ideology, whether it's a religious ideology or political ideology or an economic ideology. They're just looking for how can I find a solution that works. That's what makes a person progressive. Hope that answers. And by the way, when BI came over, there was a glitch in when they hooked it up and our phones went off for 4 days, as did our computers. No one could even come in the office. But you've been given a solution today. You want to come in next Saturday? Call now. The phones are working, and everything's up, and the computers are, and people are there. All the best to you, David. And let's say hello. Let's say hello with John from Washington Heights. Hi, John.
Gary, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have been a progressive participant and builder of social movements all my life. I'm 60 years old. But I disagree with your assertion that in this election, vote should be for a third-party candidate. I unapologetically, to this day, was a voter in 2000 for Ralph Nader. But I think that the stakes are too high this year and believe that your dismissal of the importance, let's say, of Supreme Court appointments is misleading.
Okay, then let's take a look. John, let's say that you're right. All right? Now, this president, reelected, this president has met repeatedly with all the major corporate interests who donated money, and the largest ones were Wall Street, and therefore he agreed and gave the green light to the Federal Reserve and his Treasury Secretary to make sure that their interest in saving their companies and giving them money they didn't even ask for and didn't even need at zero interest, so they can then turn around and make money off it in the foreign currency markets or buying competition. This is the guy who said that you don't have right to habeas corpus. He is a constitutional professor. That means that you, John, could be arrested if you showed up at a protest where they're Secret Service or they're guarding some any dignitary, because even to protest to hold up a simple piece of paper that says, I'm in disagreement with you, that's grounds for your arrest. Your phones are being listened to. Every single communication you have is being monitored. That under this president. This president has been working behind the scenes in the last 4 years to guarantee the passage of the Trans-Pacific Pact, which will make all other bad treaties seem minor by comparison, virtually taking away the sovereignty. He has overseen the outsourcing of jobs by supporting movements, including to General Electric, where he brought in the head of General Electric, Imwalt, who was the one of the chief outsourcers of jobs. He chose not to get corporate America to pay its fair share by having a forgiveness on outstanding $32 trillion in foreign profits, given a one-time 10% fee that gives us $3.2 to $3.3 trillion. Instead, he encourages people to continue working for a minimum wage. He has not pushed for single-payer coverage. He said he would. He did not push to get us out of the wars. He got us further into the wars. And the disguise of taking some troops out of Iraq, more mercenaries went into Iraq. It's simply, they were no longer official government troops. They were private contractor troops. This is the person that could have, by executive order, put a moratorium on home foreclosures or giving the banks any more money until there was a moratorium. He chose not to. This is a person who did not insist the banks bring the cost of a mortgage down to the value of the property, ensuring that another 50 million Americans would be made homeless. This is a man who did not demand from their own Supreme Court appointees that they revise and have a national campaign by constitutional amendment, if need be, to eliminate Citizens United, which allowed all this. This is a man who's used over $1 billion, the largest amount in world history, to get elected to office. He owes people for that. And when was the last time you saw a true progressive in his administration? He had a chance to bring in a list of any one of nine we recommended to oversee the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Instead, he brought in the top pro-GMO person, Tom Vilsack, to head the USDA, and in turn brought in the man who ended up running the FDA's food security, Michael Taylor, from Monsanto. He has brought in all of the people to help at the FDA to ensure that pharmaceutical companies are given a fast track and no heavy, in-depth, independent scrutiny of the safety or efficacy of drugs. So exactly where am I wrong in suggesting that those people who would have gotten us, Jill Stein and these third-party candidates, would have gotten us out of Iraq, Afghanistan, closed down the bases, created proper taxation, would have stopped the erosion of our freedom of choices in health care and our food selection, would have gotten involved in green, real green. He has supported clean coal. That's an oxymoron. He has supported putting 23 more nuclear power plants in. So I look at the whole world, and I'm saying that there is no difference between Romney, but there's an enormous difference between Romney and Obama and all of the four independent party candidates. But when we lose, which we will, by voting for third party, that means that right after the election, all the third party candidates can come together. I've already spoken with all of them, and including Jesse Ventura and Ralph Nader and Dennis Kucinich, and form a real People's Party. So you lose today, but you gain a voice and people, articulate spokespersons and smart on the agenda for the future, because it's only going to get worse. And this man has lied about everything he has done in office. If you can't see that, then you're back to that mindset of the commentary of justifying the worst of two evils. But I thank you very much for calling in and sharing your point of view. I'm Gary Nall. We have no more time today. Sorry. We'll have time tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. And continue listening right here to our emergency broadcasts of WBAI. And you can go to the Internet and listen to our Progressive Radio Network. Have a nice day, everyone. Someone else controls your very soul.